You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello and welcome into the Fog.net podcast. My name is Michael Swain, the Kansas beat writer for 24/7 Sports. Here we are, another Sunday, Kevin. Another Sunday. It got dark at freaking 5:30. I hated it.
Fall back.
I'll tell you what, Kevin, I needed the extra hour after what was a long night after KU football defeats Iowa State 28-21 at Jack Trice Stadium, KU's first win in Ames since 2008. I mean, Kevin, I could go through a whole list of the first time senses after this game with KU clenching seven wins and having a 7-2 record. But for you, the weekend, how did it treat you?
You know, I'm bad a little something. So if I sound a little off, that's why. But otherwise, you know, it was a great weekend for college football. A great weekend to have all those games to watch. It didn't disappoint at all. I know a lot of people feel like that first weekend in November is typically, you know, maybe the best weekend for college football. How about you? Did you wind up driving back from Ames after that night game? And how did that go?
Yeah, we did a day trip. So myself, Matt Tate, and someone else drove up and back in the same day. And that was a long day. And I'm fortunate that Matt and one of his buddies decided to do most of the driving. So I was sitting in the back seat, just, you know, providing moral support. But yes, we drove up on Saturday morning and then drove back Saturday night. We were able to watch like the K-State Texas game on the way up. We were able to watch some of the other stuff going on. And then obviously on the way back, got the end of the Colorado game and all of that. But you're right, it was a big weekend of college football. Yeah. I think KU, right, getting the ESPN game to cap a day like that, I feel like is a pretty big stage. I'll be really fascinated to see what the television numbers look like when they come back later this week, because it ended up being an exciting game at the end. But yeah, I'm always fascinated by these night slots, especially on ESPN or a Fox. Just tuning in, right? I feel like a lot of people go out, they have their day, whether you're living in the West Coast, the East Coast, Midwest, like you go out, you have your day, you come back 7, 8, 9 o'clock, like you're kind of sitting down to hang out and see what's on. So I think KU probably had a pretty good stage for, I think, what was a pretty good performance for KU. What stood out to you most? Like, let's dive into it. What stood out?
Well, I know, you know, doing pregame stuff for the Iowa State radio station and everything, one of the things that I had said was that Kansas was probably going to struggle running the ball. And we talked about that on this podcast. And so I said, you know, two things kind of needed to happen in order for Kansas to win. One, the defense had to really show up well and kind of control their end. And the other thing was Jason Bean has played really well at points this year, to the point that you would even say brilliantly at points this year, but he's put the ball at risk at times. And the thing that I said was Jason Bean cannot put the football at risk, because Iowa State, I felt like, was not great offensively. I felt like you didn't want to give them short fields. You didn't want to give them momentum, but also Iowa State's the type of team that can make you pay when you put the ball at risk. You aren't going to see that dropped interception. You're going to see them, you know, take advantage of it. And so when you looked at how the game played out, it played out kind of the way that you would have. I mean, obviously you'd love everything to go perfectly. It wasn't going to go that way, but at the same time, you struggled running the ball. Jason Bean did not put the ball at risk. And you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this here in a minute. That was maybe his best performance, I thought, of his Kansas career, maybe his most complete performance, and then the defense, you know, and I'm sure we'll talk about them specifically. The defense was just terrific.
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of good points there, Kevin. I think for me, starting fast was going to be huge, right?
Yeah.
Because you look at KU, and I've probably been hammering at this maybe too much looking back at how much I've written about it and things, but you know, KU has not had a fast start in a road game. If you want to count Nevada as a fast start, you can. I wouldn't agree with you, but
sure.
You know, you have to go back to like November of 2021 for a time that Kansas like started well. And I felt like this was the type of game where in this crowd, in this atmosphere, KU needed to start fast, and they were able to, right? The defense comes out, it forces the stop early on. And yep. I want to go here because I feel like it encapsulates the entire performance. You know, I'm on the pregame, on the sideline pregame, right? And
yeah.
I like to go down and just see and chat with people and stuff. But it was very apparent on the sideline pregame that Kansas was bigger than Iowa State. And I covered some of those great Iowa State teams. Like there were times when Iowa State walked into Texas, walked into Oklahoma, and looked like some of the bigger teams. Like Iowa State, Campbell has built physically imposing teams before. And to see KU warming up and, you know, 20 feet away, Iowa State's warming up, you can just see how much more physically developed KU looks. Like that stood out to me pregame. And I think you saw that throughout the course of the game. I think it started defensively where the first half, right, they were getting after him. They were getting after him. Like there's the one play where Austin Booker does a rush to the inside and just like forearm shoves the left tackle and the guy just goes flying out of the way. And credit to Rocco Beck, like he made a ton of really good plays. And I think KU could end this game with even more tackles for loss, even more sacks if Rocco didn't have such a quick release and a good feel for the pocket. So I think for me, like the defensive start to the game was so important here to make sure that KU is able to get off on the right foot, and man, and they were able to do it. And I think just for me, like so much of that first half was so encouraging because KU was without Devin Phillips really. And yep. Tommy Dunn didn't make the trip, right? Devin got hurt against Oklahoma, tried to give it a go. He couldn't go. And Tommy didn't even make the trip. And Kevin, I think we talked about in the offseason, right? You feel good about KU's defensive tackles, but if you go into a game like this without two of probably your top three defensive tackles, like you don't feel great about it. And yet, if you watch the game, KU's defensive line was getting after it. So for me, like watching the first kind of quarter or so, like that was super encouraging to see.
Yeah, yeah, I think absolutely. And I thought the defensive line maybe controlled the game more than any other unit on KU's team. And I think that allowed the linebackers to play fast and aggressively, you know. Hi, Craig Young, you know, like we had been talking on the show about how a lot of times Craig Young doesn't show up as much because of the things they ask him to do. It's not that he's not playing well. It's that, you know, he's being asked to run with a tight end, you know, down, you know, or a slot receiver or somebody and do something differently. Craig Young had two tackles for loss and, you know, he was aggressive at getting forward. You know, Rich Miller was aggressive coming forward. You know, I thought that the defensive line playing the way that they did, I thought really set the tone. And quite frankly, if not for Rocco Beck to maybe having the two that come to my mind in terms of guys passing the ball against Kansas efficiently, Keaton Slovis that first half against BYU was kind of unconscious.
Totally.
And Rocco Beck was tremendously accurate. I thought that he, you know, he threw the ball really well. He played with a lot of poise. I think back to when you look at where he was earlier this year, when you look at where he is now, you know, he just continues to grow. And Iowa State's got a really nice looking quarterback there. But I thought if Beck didn't play at the level that he played at, like this might have been a runaway, as crazy as that sounds, because I thought going in, and maybe this is maybe we'll talk about it now, maybe later.
Yeah.
Going in, I thought both you and I felt like this was the toughest remaining game on Kansas' schedule. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on that. I mean, obviously there's the Kansas State game in Lawrence that was there, but we thought that this could be, and I thought this would be Kansas' toughest remaining game, both because where Iowa State is, but also the night game being in Ames. You know, Kansas's play on the road, generally speaking, Kansas's play against Iowa State's defensive system, where Kansas typically hasn't been able to run the ball at all on Iowa State. And so all of those things combined, I thought that this was maybe the biggest chance for a loss in Kansas's final four games.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at trend lines, so I think maybe, Kevin, this could differentiate, right? If you want to look at trend lines, yes, this was definitely the thing with the most trends going against KU, right? Iowa State's so good at home, at night, under Campbell. You look at what KU's done against the 3-3-5, running the ball, right? That's not a great sign if you're going to go on the road and play that type of style, right, and try and suck the air out of the ball and limit possessions. Like, it's kind of tough to do that when you're playing as a defense that continuously stops you. But I think K-State, like, team talent, you know, I think that's definitely the toughest. But I think you're right, though, with Rocco. You know, he's pretty poised and made some good plays. But even then, KU punishes the one mistake he made. And look, Melo Dotson deserves a ton of credit, right? Like, I've been thinking about this more, and I'll probably write about it Monday, but this is a guy that is playing on the opposite side of Kobe Bryant, who is probably one of the better cornerbacks in the country, right? This isn't even – we're at the point now where it's not even the conference. Like, we're talking country in terms of impact, shutting down a side of the field, not making mistakes. Like, the flag he got the flag that was thrown on him, I don't know. Like, that was kind of 50-50 for me. It felt like there were other times in the game that it was similar contact and nothing was thrown. So it's whatever. But Melo playing on the other side of Kobe, right? He's going to get, like, thrown at more. And as a result, like, corner is one of the hardest positions to play in football. And so he's in a tough position. And I think this, the last two games kind of just show you that, hey, like, he's here too. And he's also a really good player who I'm getting the feel like would start at a lot of other teams in the Big 12. And I think you got to give credit to him. Give me your thoughts on Mel. Then I've got a good story that I don't think you would have seen if you watched it on TV.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think we talked about this after the Texas game where Melo got picked on a little bit, you know, with A.D. Mitchell. And most teams don't have, you know, a Xavier Worthy on one side, and then you put your number one corner on him, and A.D. Mitchell is the guy on the other side. But I think we talked about it then where we said, you know, you come away from that game and you're thinking, you know, man, like, Melo really struggled. But you look at the other side and you say, well, if Melo was the number one corner and teams, you know, were choosing to split things up, he wouldn't get tested as often. He's getting tested as often as he is, not because he's a bad player, but because Kobe Bryant's on the other side. And so you have to go that way with the football. And I think Dotson's confidence seems like it continues to grow. His competence seems like it continues to grow each week. And I think, you know, that's something you have to consider when you see him get thrown at 5 or 10 times a game or whatever, is the fact that it's not that they're testing him all that because his guy's always open. It's because Kobe Bryant's on the other side. That's where you're going with the ball more than likely.
Yeah, so this is why I love going to road games and just being at games in general, because you don't see these things on TV. So Melo takes his helmet off, right? Which, like, and we all know that's, like, that's going to be a flag.
Yeah.
And Leipold is pissed on the sideline, like, so mad. And you see him kind of walk away from the end zone up the sideline, like, looking for Melo to yell at him, most likely. And you see him look and look, and then all of a sudden he just turns around, grabs the mic, goes like this, and just, you can see him, like, yelling into it. And then I look down the sideline to find Jordan Peterson, who clearly got the message from Leipold to go talk to Melo. And Melo's down there dapping up guys, like, yeah, good play, this, that. And then Jordan grabs him and talks to him for a second. But then obviously, right, you see why Leipold was so pissed about it. Because they pushed it back 15 yards. And isn't that the play then when Iowa State almost takes to the house and there's a ghost call along the sideline?
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of these moments where, right, it's funny that Leipold got upset and wanted to yell at him, but then you see why he was so frustrated. And so it's just one of those chain of events that like is so you had to be there. And so
yeah, really, sure.
It's just interesting.
Sure. Those are always funny. I still, you know, not to get too far off topic, but I still remember Moderic Johnson dropping a potential touchdown pass against Missouri, and he's coming off and you see Mangino going over to, you know, to scream at him. And Johnson sees him at about the 50 and starts veering off like toward the 30, you know, like, I'm not going that way. That's danger. And you see Mangino, you know, start taking off to get down there so that he can yell. Stuff like that, that's always great to see. And like you said, you don't, that's something you only see if you're there. It's not something that you get a chance to really see on TV or how that's handled. And so that's pretty funny. It was obviously, you know, like you said, a mistake, but a mistake that came after a terrific play. And so it's one that I think Kansas would, I don't want to say would live with, but you know, you'd rather have the touchdown than not, obviously.
Well, look, yeah, the phantom call, right? I mean, I think it's pretty clear now that, you know, Jalen Knoll did not step out of bounds and that, you know, KU benefited from that. But still, it's one of those situations where, I mean, Melo makes a great play, but then the defense does its job, right? And I think it's this complementary football kind of coming together in this game where it just was super impressive to see it come together in the way that it did, where the offense couldn't really run the ball, right? And yet they're getting into these third and longs, and it's Jason Bean just dropping back and slinging it. And we can probably get into his performance, because if you look at the Pro Football Focus grades, his grade, I believe, is like a 90.8 or something in that realm, is the highest graded passing performance from a Kansas quarterback against Power 5 team under Lance Leipold. And you would have thought, like, hey, maybe Jalen had one of these. Like, maybe the Liberty Bowl was one of those. Like, no. This passing performance from Jason Bean is it. And, you know, Leipold postgame mentioned that, oh, you know, his stats aren't going to jump out at you. But I'd say, look, if you're completing 61% of your passes for 12 yards an attempt,
20 yards of completion,
like, yeah, you take that. Those numbers do jump off the page. They're good. And just how explosive they were. And obviously, like, there's the 80-yard play, but shoot. I mean, even without that, like, it's still a really strong performance from Bean. And I thought he just made good throw after good throw after good throw. And I don't know if you're like me, Kevin, but as the game went on, I'm waiting, like, okay, like, when's it going to come? Like, when's he going to throw it to someone on the other team? And it's going to come down if they pick it up or not, or if they catch it. And it just didn't happen. And I think that speaks to the way that Bean was mentally processing everything and the reads and the way they're going through it, that he's able to play this clean of a game against a team that has been so prolific at taking the ball away from opposing teams. Like, granted, Jeremiah Cooper, their leading safety, wasn't playing, but, you know, Miles Purchase and TJ Tampa are two really good cornerbacks that they have. You know, Bo Freeler and Michael Verdon are two other guys that would play at other Big 12 teams. Like, I just, Bean was on fire, man. And that was great to see. Cause I'll say it again, no one deserves it more than him, with everything he's dealt with and coming back and all of that.
Each of Kansas's top five receivers, you know, you look at that, had a catch of at least 17 yards. Mm. So, I mean, you know, there's the 80 yarder for Arnold, but you had the unbelievable catch, obviously, by Quentin Skinner. You have Luke Graham with the 17 yarder that he was able to bring in. Tanaka Scott and Douglas Emelian with the 21 yarder apiece. And so Bean was spreading the ball around. He wasn't making mistakes. And even beyond that, I think one of the knocks on him, you know, at least earlier this year or whatever else that we had talked about, was that when you needed Bean to make a play in the highest of leverage situations, there were times when he wasn't able to make that play. Yeah. And against Iowa State, that wasn't the case at all. Like, when Kansas needed a clutch throw, Jason Bean had that clutch throw. I mean, Iowa State closes to within 21-18. He connects with LJ Arnold on the 80 yarder for a touchdown. And even beyond that, when Kansas is trying to run out the clock, you know, and, you know, you're not able to run the ball necessarily, but you're able to run it enough to make a manageable situation. Mm-hmm. He has the ball to Jared Casey. You know, he was able to pick up different third downs on key drives. He was very clutch in the moment, I thought, against Iowa State. And, you know, it's interesting because obviously he's had moments where he's been unbelievable. I mean, the second half against TCU when he took over for, you know, he had what, like 270 passing yards or something like that in a half. You look at what he did against Oklahoma State, kind of heading into, you know, through the first, you know, couple quarters, two and a half quarters or so like that. He made a really clutch play in a big moment against Oklahoma, you know, on that fourth down connecting with Arnold. This is the first game that I can remember where he was consistently clutch throughout in high leverage situations. He didn't put the ball at risk. He was making good decisions. Like I said, I think this is as well as Jason Bean has played quarterback at the University of Kansas.
I agree, Kevin. High leverage moments, third downs, yeah, right? That's when it comes down to. I think these third down numbers are crazy. I pulled them up here in front of me. So Bean was 2 of 7 on third down in the first half. 4 of 6 on third down in the second half. Right. It feels like traditionally you'd flip flop those, right? For a lot of these Bean performances, right? Where it's first half, 4 of 6, and then, you know, 2 of 7 in the second half. And I think, you know, just as the game went on, like I just felt like he was had so much confidence, and you could just see it. The way he was surveying the field, the decisions, the guys he was deciding to throw to, right? Was just making great calls. And I think Andy Kordanecki, this is one of those game plans where if you're gonna do like a seminar on how to counter what defenses are doing against you, like in the passing game, this is the exact game I think you'd show.
Sure.
Where as the game progressed, right, Haycock, who I think is one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, really started to hone in, and those safeties that you see for Iowa State were really firing, right? Their middle safety, that's kind of like a linebacker, and then their boundary guy was firing to the ball, right? They're around the line of scrimmage. And then what happens, right? There's the touchdown, I believe, for Iowa State. They play the Juicy Wiggle song that everybody loves. They got the dance to it. The stadium's going crazy. And, you know, Haycock's thinking, all right, here they go. They're going to run the ball on first down. We're going to get a TFL on first down, stall this drive. We're getting the ball back. We're going to win the game. And then it's play action. Lawrence Arnold wide open, 80 yards. Like, and then you go to later in the game, the game sealing play to Jared Casey. It's another one where you think, okay, here comes a run. Here comes a run. All of a sudden, Jared Casey's wide open. And I think for Bean too, it's the touch on those throws to put it in position where those guys aren't having to make like 9 or 10 out of 10 difficult catches. Like those guys can make those plays. And I just think Bean and the play calling, like everything came together in this where it's not going to be a game where you look and see KU put up 50. But I felt like execution-wise, like KU was right there, and they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, they were able to get some of the matchups they wanted against safeties and take advantage of those matchups. I think, you know, it was well called in that we knew Kansas was going to struggle to run the ball. I mean, that's just been the case against not just the system, but this defense particularly, you know, Iowa State's defense.
Yeah.
But they didn't go away from it. And I actually, you know, some people are going to say, why are you running the ball when you're running it for 2.1 a carrier or whatever it was? The reason why you do that is, you know, you steal some time here, you steal some time there, you stretch out a possession a little bit, you make it 3rd and 5, you know, with 2.5 yard carries as opposed to 3rd and 12. And so I thought they did a really nice job of balancing things out, even as the passing game was obviously, you know, more effective. Honestly, if Kansas ran for, you know, they ran for 74 yards. If they ran for 10 yards and threw for 400, I'm not sure they win this game. I'm really not. I think that they needed at least the threat of that run to keep Iowa State honest. And so when you look at all of that and how they were, you know, how they were able to do that against this defense, this Iowa State defense, to be a combined 7 of 14 over 3rd and 4th downs, you know, it is really, really impressive. And I can't say enough about the Iowa State defense and all the things that Haycock does that makes life so difficult for everybody. I mean, I think Brent Venables is one of the best defensive coaches in the country, and Venables admits that he openly steals from Haycock. So, I mean, mm-hmm. that kind of tells you, you know, how respected and everything he is. But yeah, I thought that Kansas attacked Iowa State's defense about as perfectly as you could. This wasn't going to be a game where Kansas had 200 yards rushing. It probably wasn't going to be a game where Kansas was going to have 400 yards offense, but they had 360 and they were able to be opportunistic in what they did. And I think that was a huge key. And that was the way that Kansas was going to get out of Ames with a win.
Yeah. And I think, look, the defense wasn't perfect in the second half. I think Iowa State had some success kind of getting in behind KU's linebackers, right? That's an area where we've seen people really try and attack KU this season. It's kind of in the area, right? Because KU does play deep safeties a lot. And so it's kind of in that area right in front of like OJ and Kenny and Marvin, but also behind the linebackers. And it wasn't perfect in the second half, but the defense held on and they got the stops they needed, right? A shorthanded defense did the job. And I think that, look, you look at offense, you look at defense, like it was not perfect, right? The offense did not score every drive. There were lulls in the game. The defense did not get a stop every time. But I think it's enough of that complimentary football coming together where KU is able to win the game. How worried are you about special teams at this point?
Not super worried. I mean, I get the issues, especially from a kicking standpoint, you know, and it's unfortunate because you bring in Seth Keller, who had obviously been a really, you know, effective kicker at his previous stop. And I think he felt like, you know, he was going to make short kicks pretty automatic for you. And I think they felt like, hey, you know, on longer kicks, we've got a guy too. Noel breaking that long kick return, you know, obviously was a huge play that the Kansas got bailed out on, but you know, you're talking about complimentary football, you know, he has that return. It gets brought back some, and you know, the next three plays, you know, you basically have a run stuff by Caleb Taylor and Hayden Hatcher for 1 yard. Then, you know, Becht throws incomplete. And then, you know, Rich Miller gets the sack of Becht. And so they wind up having that big play. It gets partially brought back. And Iowa State gets negative 6 yards on three plays. And so the defense, I thought, made up for it fairly well there. You do worry. I think you worry a little bit going into the K-State game, right? Because it's like Kansas State has proven that they can win games or hang around games by exploiting special teams mistakes. They did it this weekend. You know, they were getting absolutely hammered by Texas, and then they block a punt. It sets up a quick touchdown, and all of a sudden it's game on. And so I think that's the one thing that maybe scares you a little bit. What's kind of your worry level at this point?
Too many mistakes are creeping in. That for me, where you looked at kind of the first five games of the season-ish, right? Four games in the season. They're really solid, right? I think they had the number one special teams unit in SP Plus as a result. And then all of a sudden you look at that UCF game in the second half and there are a couple mistakes. And then you look at Oklahoma State, right? There's those PATs and that were just rough looking. And then they go to the bye week, but then they come back, right? Trevor Wilson muffs a punt. Seth Keller misses another field goal, I believe. And then this week, you know, now you're looking at it, you missed two more field goals. Like Seth Keller now is, I believe, 3 for his last 6 in field goals. And look, he was a guy that was hitting 40s, low 40s at Texas State at a good rate. I don't think it's that different. And maybe I'm naive and don't understand it. But to me, I look at it and say, like, you were doing it there. Like, it's not that much different. And you're doing it earlier this season. So I don't know. I will say,
and maybe this is the wrong way to look at it.
Yeah.
For college kickers, a lot of times 40 plus is, you know, I don't want to say it's pushing it, but you get some pretty wildly varying accuracies at that that point. And, you know, Keller missed from 41, which, you know, you would hope he would hit, but he missed it. And he missed from 50. So, you know, I wouldn't have, or I guess, was it Popper Jettis that attempted the 50?
It's Peeper yeah. Gurdis, but I love that. I love that attempt. That's great.
Popper Gurdis. Okay. Yeah. I screwed that up pretty bad. He missed the 50. 50s are tough, you know.
Yeah, obviously. I agree.
41, I still say, you know, you'd hope he would hit it, but it's not. It's a 55% kick, maybe. So, I mean, I guess maybe I'm not super worried because of that. But yeah, Popper Gurdis's family is going to come after me in the mentions. I apologize. I tried hard. I was not on my game on that.
That's funny. No, it's all good. But yeah, so it's just something to track, something to put in the back of your head, right? Yeah. For the K-State game, especially. But let's go big picture. I'm going to have a little bit of a soliloquy here, but the win over Iowa State, right? Like, Campbell and Leipold have a lot in common, right? D3 sure. backgrounds, MAC, developmental program. And Leipold was pretty upfront in 2021 and last year talking about how he wanted KU to kind of use the blueprint that Iowa State had in terms of developing a team. And Leipold also talked about going to Iowa State in 2021 and getting off the bus and seeing that brand new football facility they have. That's pretty good looking, right? $90 million. And he talks about how that was a moment where he realized how far KU had to go in the facilities race to match Iowa State. And over the next 4 hours, right, he also sees how far KU had to go to match Iowa State on the field. And here we are, you know, 2 years later, and KU's got the infrastructure with the program, right, where there's plenty of support in the program. They've got the new facility coming. They've got the stadium renovation coming. And they've got
a bridge coming, though.
And do they have a bridge? No, there's no – actually, I mean, hey, man, the University of Kansas already has a bridge, right? And
yeah,
it's going true. Over whatever – over Iowa. They need to market that a little bit better, in my opinion.
There you go.
But and now you look at it, right, Kevin, 2 years later, the financial support is there for KU to match what Iowa State has, if not surpass it, and surpass it by a lot. They've got a better team than Iowa State right now, and the team that will be better next year too.
With how many guys? I don't know. I'd like to think so, but I also think this is an Iowa State team that's got a lot of young talent, and so. Yeah.
That offensive line's not going to get any better.
The offensive line is where they're going to need to portal and get a couple guys, I think, for sure.
Man, but that's not Campbell.
Yeah, and therein lies the problem. But defensively, yeah. They've got a lot of young talent that I think looks really, really good.
Exactly. And then you're back to it's what Iowa State is. But to
my point, then you're back to, yeah, Iowa State being top 10 defense and not
– right. So
being able to protect
broadly, Kevin, if KU is going to be a consistent bowl team, what do they have to do? They have to beat the Iowa States of the world.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
And this is more like the level of team, right? And so you look to the new Big 12. Okay. So the top, I believe, of the conference, right? You're looking at programs like Utah, right? They're going to walk in day one and be one of the best teams. I think K-State consistently with Chris Klieman, they're going to be really good. I think Oklahoma State with Gundy, they're going to be really good. But then there's this kind of hodgepodge of teams where you look at maybe in Arizona, an Iowa State, West Virginia, Texas Tech, thank you. Yeah, of course, TCU. But there's this whole kind of hodgepodge of teams that KU is going to be in with.
Sure.
And you've got to have the support and you've got to have the developmental ability to get guys in and have them become better over the course of time. And so I just think this type of game is really important for the kind of like the benchmark of where Kansas is taking steps forward to be able to have success in the new Big 12. And what does that mean? Well, you know, if you win the Big 12, right, there's new college football playoff format coming where you are in the playoff. And so if you can compete at the top of the Big 12, all of a sudden you are playing in the biggest stage in college football. Yep. And so, you know, it's just one of these things where it's kind of like a ladder and you continue trying climbing it. And so KU is now in this point where this team, and it seems like with the trend of where this program is headed, that they should be able to compete with the Iowa States, the West Virginias, and be able to beat those teams. And therefore, if you beat those teams, you're getting closer to being in that biggest stage in college football with the playoffs. So I just, it's a long way to get to it, but I just think this type of game is really interesting in that. And sure, especially when you compare it to 2 years ago.
Yeah. And I, you know, I would recommend everybody, you know, look further back on our channel to our interview with Travis Goff. And one of the things that he had kind of said was, why not us? You know, when you look at that group, when you look at the different advantages that Kansas can have, when you look at the coming new facilities and everything else, I'm not saying, you know, that he was saying, you know, Kansas should win the Big 12 next year, but when we're looking at 2028, 2029, you know, down the road a little bit, I think you make a great point. When you look at all of those programs, when you look at the way Kansas is recruiting right now, you add that part to it and everything, I think Kansas has a chance. There's somebody from that group that you just mentioned that's going to be at or near the top of the conference. You know, Utah's, you know, seems like they're going to be up there at the top. Oklahoma State, K-State, like you said, probably, is, you know, based on recency and everything and consistency and all those different things. There's somebody right in that group of like five or six teams right below that, who's going to be up there with those teams and may even, you know, wind up being at the top of those teams, depending on the way that things develop and other factors and things like that. And so games like this are important, and games like this week against Texas Tech is going to be important. Texas Tech's recruiting at a really high level. You know, I think, you know, I could be wrong on this because it's been a couple weeks since I've probably looked at the recruiting standings, but I think Texas Tech has the best class of any of the new Big 12s. I mean, obviously they're not a new Big 12 school, but
no,
the teams that are going to be in the new Big 12, I think they have the best recruiting class right now. And so talent being, you know, what it is and being so important, you know, obviously that's a big deal. And the teams that perform well in those first 2 years or so in the new Big 12, they could have a leg up in recruiting. You know, if Kansas all of a sudden goes from, hey, 2 years ago, you know, we won two games to, hey, we just finished second in the new look Big 12, the recruiting could take another, you know, step up at that point as well. And so these next few years become really important for sort of establishing that baseline and everything too.
Yeah, and it's why I think a winning season this year is just so important, period, right? Sure. To continue to show consistency. And you are right. Texas Tech does have the number one class in terms of points, and that's counting, right? The fact they do have a lot of commits, but also in terms of the average rating, right? They're only behind Colorado. So, I mean, they're recruiting at a very high level. So I think, you know, this is just another one of those kind of benchmark wins. And KU's got another one of those games in 2 weeks, but obviously this week is going to be a really huge one for KU to keep that momentum going because, you know, I thought Brian Borland was really interesting this week, you know, and I think honestly, like Andy Koldenecki gets a lot of the plaudits, right, for being entertaining for an interview. But if you listen to what Brian Borland says, it's really interesting. And he's pretty frank. Like he shoots you straight. And he basically said this week, like, look, if we want to be a championship program, like you can't week to week, like have games where you're up and down, you're up and down. Every week you've got to kind of just be there and be ready to work. And I think this is the type of game where coming off of such a huge win for KU over Oklahoma, and a game that needed so much, I think, just emotional energy to come back, the ups and downs, the delays, everything, to come back and have this type of, I think, generally complete performance, I think shows that they're also taking that step in the direction of getting there. So I think it's another one of those kind of boxes checked.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, even beyond that, I think the defense being able to stack performances like that, because the defense was so important against Oklahoma with what they were able to do. And, you know, that comeback was made possible because they got stops in the biggest of moments. And I think being able to build off of that, you know, and continue to grow with that week in and week out, I'll be honest with you, you know, entering the season, I had some questions about Brian Borland based on what they did last year, you know, based on the fact that, you know, a lot of what Kansas had been running was really simple stuff. And that was by design. You know, I think they mostly wanted to, hey, let's not get beat deep. Let's make teams, you know, take 10 plays to find the end zone as opposed to getting us over the top. But I think that as this year has gone on, you've seen very tangible improvement with that defense and with the defense's confidence. You've seen the way that they've continued to play better. And I do think that Borland's star is trending up, I guess you would maybe say, in terms of how that group is playing. I thought they played really well against Iowa State. And like I said, I thought they did that despite the fact that I thought Rocco Becht was really kind of on one. You know, I thought he was seeing the field really well. He was, you know, avoiding pass rushers really well and keeping his eyes downfield and finding guys. And, you know, I thought Kansas played about as well as it could defensively in that game for what was going on.
Yeah, and it's almost like the equivalent of the 3-3-5 defense is to KU's run game. Up-tempo teams are to KU's defense. And yeah, they've got an up-tempo team in Texas Tech coming in this week. And watching Tech on Thursday beat TCU, I thought the running back Texas Tech has is really good. He's a physical guy that has some juice to him. I thought the backup quarterback for Tech was playing. I thought he's playing really well. Yep. Like, this is a Tech team that's not played well on the road this year, and they've really struggled, I think, out playing teams from outside the state of Texas as well. But I think this is another one of those kind of check the box, right? Texas Tech, that game last year was not pretty.
Yeah.
Right? They got basically waxed early, fought back, right? But it's another chance for KU to kind of show, all right, improvement, right? This is a better team than last year's team. Can you now go show it at home against a Texas Tech team that, again, is coming off a good win against Iowa State? They got two extra days of prep, which I think is pretty big if you're going to go on the road and play.
Yeah, and they've got some defensive linemen that I think are going to play in the NFL, or at least guys, you know, along that front, I guess. One of them's a linebacker, you know, who basically is a stand-up edge guy. But, yeah, I think that this is a real challenge for Kansas to keep that consistency going. We know that Kansas has typically been a lot better at home. You know, they've typically started better at home. They've, you know, gotten off to some great starts against, you know, some fairly solid teams at home. And so when you look at all of that, like you said, it was just so encouraging to see the fact that there wasn't any sluggishness coming off that Oklahoma game with all of the things that involved, with bumping you back into the polls, with you being in the college football playoff rankings for the very first time, with all of those different things where you could have, it would have been so easy to pat yourself on the back and be satisfied and come into that Iowa State game and not play well. With the way that they were very businesslike in that Iowa State game, I think, you know, you can expect probably something similar this week. I think one of the keys is going to be, can they get those defensive tackles back healthy because of all the snaps that Texas Tech is going to try and get those guys on the field for? You know, it's Iowa State was an offense that, hey, if you're getting them off the field in three plays, you can maybe be okay with those guys out. But I think when you look at Devin Phillips, when you look at Tommy Dunn, you know, those are guys that Kansas may need back and may need back in the lineup this week.
Yeah, so we'll see. Yep. By the time you're listening to this, KU may have practiced already. It depends on when you're listening to this, on Monday, Tuesday, or whenever you get to it. But, Kevin, I think that's what I got thoughts-wise. You got anything else on the game or looking ahead to this week?
Yeah, just in general, you know, it's I know you wrote an article that I recommend people go to fog.net to check out, looking at the Pro Football Focus ratings for each player. And Jason Bean, you know, his rating, that's about as high as I can remember him having for throwing the ball, you know, it being in the 90s and everything. And then I tweeted out something today. if you look at ESPN's total QBR stat, Jason Bean is now top 20 in the country. He's number 20 and number 3 among Big 12 quarterbacks in total QBR. And that's not among backups. That's not, you know, whatever. It accounts for caliber of competition, like it's opponent adjusted. And he's a top 20 guy. And so it's very easy. And I think we probably said something a couple weeks ago where we said, you know, look, Jason Bean is your backup quarterback and you're getting pretty good play, you know, for a backup quarterback out there. You look at the way that he ended against Oklahoma. You look at what he just did against Iowa State. You look at, you know, that total QBR. Kansas is getting pretty good quarterback play right now, kind of regardless of if he's the backup quarterback or not. And so kudos to Jason Bean, because that's been a journey for him. You know, that hasn't always been the case. And I think, you know, we talked about it last week, you know, what a great story it was that, hey, this guy comes back to college basically because he makes a big mistake in a huge moment in their bowl game. And for him to have that moment against Oklahoma, you know, was such a cool thing that you know, had to give him some closure on that. Well, he came back out against Iowa State and was even better. And so, you know, if he continues to grow and develop, you know, there's no stopping this guy, as Tony Montana on Scarface would say. He's going to go straight to the top. So
I love it. That's a good way to end it. Shout out Jason Bean. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Fog.net podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you're liking the videos, subscribing to the channel, dropping comments. All those things go a long way in helping us with the algorithm and getting more people to see the show so they can engage and get a taste of whatever the heck you want to call this that Kevin and I are cooking every Sunday. If you're listening on podcast platforms, please also leave ratings and reviews on whatever platform you choose. Again, those also go equally as well as far in helping us find new people. So thanks, as always, for tuning in. We'll be back with another episode midweek previewing the Texas Tech game. But for Kevin Flaherty, I'm Michael Swain. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby Antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.